This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's Stoffman Show on the Team 980. We got plenty of fun stuff to talk about today. We have a really sad story to talk about today. There is a little bit of everything for everyone. Football, basketball. Tomorrow, Anthony, we're going to do a little baseball. Are you here tomorrow? You're here tomorrow before you leave, right? Or is today your last day?
Today is my last day, sadly.
Wait, no. I need you to be here tomorrow.
Oh, no. You trying to play a game?
I am trying to play a game.
Ah.
Or do we have Toby come in and play the game today?
I guess we could play it at 6:30.
We might have to text Toby because, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, nothing says it's almost national season like our annual game of Is That Guy a Washington National?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll work on that. But by the way, I guess the Nats, as I get a buzz on my phone, I guess the Nats and Phillies are about to get started in spring training action. Opening day Thursday, we'll be live at Tap 99 down the street here in Navy Yard, right across from the center field entrance of the ballpark. So come hang out, say what's up. Please try to do that during commercial break, the saying what's up part, because I'm very ADD. And I know we do this bit every time we talk about a live show, and then inevitably someone tries to talk to me during the show. I did have someone come up at the last Wizards game and be like, hey, are you in commercial break? And I was like, yes. He's like, okay, I just want to say hi, but I know that I can't do that during the show. And I was like, thank you for paying attention. 10 minutes or so from now, we're going to get into the sad story of the day, which is Juju Watkins' injury last night. Anthony texted me, as he usually does in the morning, saying, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, honestly, I'm pretty bummed out right now. So we'll tackle that in 10 minutes. Later on in the show, Robbie Hummel will join us. We're also going to play some pretty extended cuts from Kevin Sheehan's interview with Kevin Willard because it was really good and really interesting on both the game winner front, but also kind of the state of the program. So we'll get to that later in the show. But we start, Anthony, with where we kind of ended the show yesterday. As we walked out yesterday, we were like, damn. On this TV right up here to my left, I was watching Maryland just fall apart, as in the Lady Terps, absolutely fall apart. It's not going well. They were tied, you know, a lot of the third quarter. Then Alabama goes on this run, and actually it was kind of funny because our What's Trending update at 5:45, I gave a score update, and I said, oh, Maryland's up early third quarter, and then literally by the time we came back from that commercial break from our What's Trending break. Or What's Trending update with or at 5:45 to the time that we got back at 5:50. Maryland had lost the lead because they had given up a 13-2 run, I believe it was, at that point. And they ultimately, late in the third quarter, Anthony, trailed by 17.
Yeah, they did.
And that was kind of the state of play as we, or at least as I left yesterday, right? So We say goodbye, we depart, and next thing you know, in terms of the Craig and Anthony communications, I send you the final score and went, wait, what happened? At which point you tell me, yeah, as you were starting to walk out and leave and you were driving home, they came back. And I was like, yeah, I got that part, because they won in double overtime. What point during, now I went back and watched this today because obviously I was driving home and missed it. By the way, something that might have an announcement on whether you can check out the game on the old radio when you're driving on Friday. the game against South Carolina. We might have some more information on that at some point. I probably said too much there, but you know, when it's official, it's official. The point is, Anthony, when as you were finishing up the podcast and everything that you were working on yesterday, did you see out of the corner of your eye like, oh, they're starting to come back here?
Yeah, so I want to say to close the third, they made it a little interesting. And then I sat here for, I want to say, like the first 4 minutes of the fourth. And we kept, you know, getting closer and closer. But we just, every time we got closer, they would respond with a run of their own. So I'm like, man, I think they're just going to continue to go back and forth. So I end up leaving. I want to say I got in my car probably like, there was probably like 5 minutes left to go in the game. And I'm listening to on the ride home. And I just couldn't believe it, to be honest. And then when I got home, they were in the first overtime.
I will say, as I pulled up the game on the ESPN app to watch this at home today, my complaints from the start of the show yesterday about the length of college basketball games still stand. Because I fast forwarded to try to get to the, you know, the start of the fourth quarter. So I you know, went pretty far into the broadcast, and I was already in the second overtime. So I rewind. I'm like, oh, okay, oh, nope, still in the first.
It was lengthy.
The fourth quarter and overtime, Anthony, took half of the total time of the game. It was like 59 minutes. I was like, I got to watch. I didn't budget an hour for this. Oh my. So we still got that. But I think the thing that was really like amazing about watching it is it was this series of mini runs that really got them back in the fourth quarter. There wasn't necessarily a huge uninterrupted run. They'd score maybe 4-6 points in a row, then Alabama would get a bucket. 4-6 points in a row, Alabama would get a bucket. They start to add those up and like, okay, maybe it's like a 16-6 run or something like that. I didn't go back and double check the actual numbers, but it never was a point where you're like, oh wow, Maryland is making a huge run here. They just constantly were a little bit better in short bursts, and Alabama did enough to like kind of keep them at arm's length, but it just kept getting closer and closer and closer and closer as Sellers and Tibiasu just start hitting shot after shot after shot. But then Sarah Ashley Barker would hit a three or get a layup or do whatever and stem it for a second. And it was never like, sometimes when you overcome leads like that, you have these like snowball effects. And I think that was the thing that was in some ways really impressive about how Maryland did this yesterday was there was never a point where if you're Alabama, you're like, oh my God, this is out of control. You just keep looking up at the scoreboard being like, damn, objects in mirror are closer than they appear.
Yeah, pretty much, man. And when I say Maryland was going on the runs, granted they were going on the runs, but Alabama would just respond with a three or an and one. And it's just like, God dang, are they going to close the deficit like any closer? And then finally, Seller, she hits a three to cut it to four. And after that, it was just, you know, back and forth. It was just so good. So good. And even the last possession of regulation was a little crazy. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my God. That was insane. That was absolutely ridiculous. just a bad ball that turns into a desperation three that you hit. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's how we drew it up. But like, I guess that was a good way to phrase that, Anthony. It was like they always just hit something because it was like Maryland, during Maryland's run, Alabama would hit a bucket, but Alabama could never get consecutive buckets. Mm. Like they could never go on a run to respond. Like so often basketball is a game of dueling runs.
Yeah.
And where Maryland would go on a mini run, Alabama would stem it. Mini run, stem it. And Alabama never even had like a 6 points in a row stretch in that fourth quarter where they were able to extend that lead back out to double digits. So it just kept shrinking a little bit, a lot. It was like two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. And the thing is, the forward was Maryland inching forward towards Alabama. And then ultimately, they're able to do it, get what they needed to in the end. Force overtime, survive first overtime, win in the second overtime. Excellent defense on the final possession, by the way, to not let the ball into Barker's hands. And by the way, salute to Sarah Ashley Barker. What a performance for her. 45 points. Now, she did have 11 turnovers, but her ability to get to her right hand and just, it didn't seem to matter who was in front of her, just blow by, was incredible all game. And then in one of the biggest possessions of the game, 3:29 to go in the second overtime, she gets downhill to her right again and picks up, it's kind of a squirrely charge, a very college-y charge call, I'll call it. Anthony.
Yeah.
On Kubek draws it. Credit to her. She got the call. And at that point, that was the little bit of separation that Maryland needed to close that off. That was an incredible game, an all-time classic. But unfortunately, the biggest story in women's college basketball yesterday was the injury to Juju Watkins. Just how big is it for USC, for the title chase, for the sport writ large? We'll talk about it next on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Commanders vibe check. We're a month from the NFL draft. How you feeling? We'll check in with you coming up at 4:30. Or honestly, I'm good to talk about the state of how you feeling about this NCAA women's tournament, which got turned on its head last night in the absolute worst way. Woke up this morning and my wife checks her phone and she just goes, "Oh no, Juju got hurt last night." And I was like, "Oh man, I knew she had a bad ankle. Like, you sure that's old?" She's like, "No, this is a new post." And then I was like, "Dang, that sucks. Hopefully she's all right." And then 2 minutes later, roll over, open my phone, and I'm like, "Oh, I didn't realize it was ACL." And she goes, "What?" Because we had seen two different posts. And that was how I started my day. Just an absolutely terrible, terrible thing to happen in such a high-profile moment, in such a high-profile game. Juju Watkins, the presumptive National Player of the Year of women's college basketball, according to ESPN's Shams Charania, tears her ACL. She takes contact on a fast break last night early on in the game for University of Southern California. Her teammates rallied and absolutely blew out their opponent. And this sucks for a million reasons, Anthony. First is just the pure basketball of it all, right? We were two games away, one win by each team away from Juju Watkins versus Paige Beckers for a shot at the Final Four. And it's hard to overstate how big of a moment, how big of a game that would be. And the only, like, in a weird way, it's like, oh, it's so unprecedented. The only precedent we have is last season and the season before. But, like, having the two biggest stars in the sport face off in the way that Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese did the last couple of years is what we were going to go for, except for unlike the Caitlin Angel matchups, these two probably would have been guarding each other. Like, it would have truly been head to head. Not only, Anthony, I think the two biggest stars in the sport, there are multiple things you could measure to say that Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins are the two biggest stars in college sports. If you look at social media followings, you look at NIL earnings, if you look at pure notoriety, I know Cakes did this very silly thing this morning on the Junkies, which I thought was laughable because of how wrong it was, where he said if you took like a one of the fat heads of like Juju Watkins out on the National Mall, how many people would know Juju Watkins? He's like, "Ah, not many." I was like, no, a lot of them, like more so than any other athlete in college sports. Anthony, if I showed you a fat or two photos and said, "I need you to identify both of, or one of these people," would you have a better chance of identifying Cam Ward, who's about to go number one in the NFL draft, or Juju Watkins?
Juju Watkins, no questions.
Cooper Flagg or Juju Watkins?
Juju Watkins, no question.
Okay, is there anybody else that's a bigger name? Travis Hunter or Juju Watkins?
That one's tough.
That one's tougher. Travis is the Heisman Trophy winner. He's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think I would probably still lean Juju.
Yeah, I would also lean Juju. Juju Watkins, she of featured in the Nike basketball commercial that aired in the Super Bowl. Juju Watkins, star of her own State Farm commercial. Not your mom and pop insurance company. State Farm, the biggest, or one of the biggest, all due respect to Allstate and Geico and anyone else who could potentially sponsor this show. Companies like, she is box office, bro. And she is a star among stars in LA. That is how big Juju Watkins is. And to know that we are missing out on the tournament having that kind of star power, that bar, if as long as those two players were playing, we were guaranteed to have one of them in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And two, on just the pure basketball side of it, I know probably a lot of people, actually, I think more people probably know Juju Watkins than have actually watched her play, in part because she plays on the West Coast, like locally, maybe not nationally, but locally. People be like, "Oh yeah, she's the USC basketball player. She's got the bun, right?"
Yep.
Like, she's in the Nike commercials, right? She's State Farm? Yeah, her. But, like, actually having watched her play, she plays a bunch of her games at 10 o'clock at night. So, unless you're a sicko and you have a late night schedule, yeah, Anthony, me, I haven't watched as much of Juju as I have, say, Paige, because Paige plays in the Eastern time zone, and I go to sleep at 10 o'clock every night. As I was texting one of my college basketball friends earlier today, I was like, 10 o'clock is bedtime, not tip time. This was a chance for Juju. I mean, even last night, this happens overnight for most folks.
Yeah.
Right? This is a 10 o'clock game. She gets hurt a couple minutes into it. The news breaks at like 3 a.m. or whatever it is, East Coast time. This is an overnight story that we all wake up to devastated today. And we were one game away from her playing in more reasonable windows and bigger audiences and a lot more people seeing, oh my God, watching Juju Watkins play basketball is incredible. And it also sucks because, like, record pursuits, things like that, you know, this might be the difference. Depending on how much time she misses next year, this might be the difference in Caitlin Clark staying the all-time leading scorer or not in NCAA basketball history, because Juju was very much on pace to break it. And then, as I mentioned, like, watching Paige Bueckers go absolutely bonkers last night, 34 points, 4 assists, 4 steals in 29 minutes. And that doesn't even really begin to describe how dominant she was in that game. Knowing that we were that close to seeing those two, possibly the next two number one overall picks in the WNBA draft, if not two of the next three, depending on how long Juju stays, that just sucks, man. It sucks for all of us. Nevertheless, how much it sucks for her on a human level to have to deal with that injury, which obviously surpasses all of that.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off like what you're saying, like the worst part of sports is injuries. Like you really can't control it. And it's like super unfortunate that it does happen to one of the best in college basketball. But yes, everybody was definitely anticipating that matchup between her and Paige. And, you know, her just accomplishing so much more the next couple of years. So I think we sort of kind of do take a step back, you know, in terms of, you know, what she's been able to, you know, bring to the game and things of that nature. But I think this also is a chance for, you know, to continue to grow women's sports. Again, like even building off what Caitlin Clark did last year, this year the TV ratings and things are up and it's only going to continue to go up. So it does suck and it is super unfortunate, but I think this is just a minor setback and, you know, she's going to bounce back from this.
For sure. And she'll inspire a whole bunch of people. Like there will be little girls and little boys who see Juju come back from this. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, January, February next year feels like about the right time, about 9, 10 months from now, when she'll probably be getting back on the floor. Who are like, I watched you go through this and I know that I could get through my injury and specifically maybe an ACL injury. And unfortunately, yep. Specifically on the women's side of it, there is an ACL epidemic. It's worse in soccer than it is in basketball, but there is a ton of ACL issues. And this was just a super unfortunate, like there's some contact, but you know, her knee just crumples and it hit just right / just wrong. And this happened, but I will, rebound off what you just said, Anthony, in a way that I think actually is a good thing for women's sports. And, you know, I kind of make it my mission as someone who does talk about a lot about women's sports to try not to be existential about it, right? I'm not sitting here trying to preach and convince anybody. I'm just talking about sports that I love watching.
Yeah.
Like women's sports are not a charity. I'm not trying to do charity work. I'm talking about one of the best basketball players on earth. I'm talking about some of the best basketball on earth, which is why we watch it. And with that said, there was for so many years, really until like the last 2 or 3, there was always this underlying fear of like, if something happens, a big star goes down, there's a big scandal, whatever, that it threatens basically the entire existence of the sport. I don't worry about that anymore, which is great. And especially like women's college now is so much more equal to the men's side. And, you know, depending on the year, there's going to be bigger ratings for women's games than men's games. And the championship game last year, you know, the women's game surpasses the men's game for the first time ever. Thanks in large part to Caitlin. But as you said, it's been a record viewership year this season, post-Caitlin, for ESPN on the women's side. But I genuinely like there's still issues that are specific to women's sports and some of the power struggles and, you know, when there's abuse scandals and things like that that tend to happen on the women's side way more than the men's, and those are huge problems. But I worry much less that, oh my God, Paige versus Juju is not going to happen. What does this mean for the health of the sport? It's not nothing, but it's very little. At least we are at a point where I'm just bummed out that I don't get to watch the game. Yeah. And like, I'm obviously way more sad for Juju and her family and, you know, her, the knowing how tough ACL rehab is to go through, knowing that she's going to have to go through this very painful, literally and figuratively, process. But I am at least given some relief, I guess, that one, we know how to do ACL recovery and rehab now. I feel great about her ability to come back and be every bit of the player she was ever going to be. And that's a phenomenal thing that for her, this injury happens at this point in human history where we know what we know about ACL rehab, and that's great. And that this isn't something where this injury is robbing us of anything more than an opportunity. The existential survival of the sport isn't going to die because we don't get Paige versus Juju. And I look forward to them squaring off in the future in the WNBA. So at least we got that going for us.
Nah, for sure.
Which is nice.
And I'm not going to lie, Craig, it's funny because when you were talking about, you know, people paying attention more to maybe the women's game than the men's game, my dad was literally, I was on the phone with my dad when it actually happened. Mm. And he was like, really, man? I've been paying way more attention to the women's game than the dudes. I was like, I think that's just, you know, the trajectory of like sports kind of thing. Like, it's entertaining and it's good that, you know, women are finally getting this this opportunity.
For sure. And, you know, it's there's a lot of factors that go into that. And let's carry this over next. 301-230-0980 if you want to get in on it. But like, why we've arrived at this point and also what opportunities may exist now, specifically for a player that I am very interested to see how she responds to this for Mystics reasons. So we'll continue this conversation next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. So we're just talking about the terrible news that went down last night, the terrible thing that went down last night with Juju Watkins tearing her ACL, the USC star guard. But it's, you know, how does her team respond for that? If we talk about how this affects the title race, Anthony, if USC is going to play like this, they going to be all right. They beat the ever-loving mess out of Mississippi State, bro. They won their first game against UNC Greensboro. Granted, it was a 116, but they won it 71-25. And you think, like, okay, it's 116. They won last night without Juju Watkins for the better part of 35 minutes in this game because she got hurt relatively early. 96-59.
Yeah. And it was actually worse than that. You know, in the fourth quarter, they took their foot off the gas a little bit.
As one
but
does.
But they were getting after them.
Yeah. Belt to butt?
Yeah. It was a lot of belt to butt. Because Kiki, like, she really, I guess she knew that, you know, since Juju's out, she had to, you know, take the step forward, just like she did last year when she was at Stanford, or the years she was at Stanford. She had to be the person out there that's going to be the enforcer, grab every rebound, get a lot of buckets and things of that nature. And I think she just did a great job of asserting herself. So she's going to have to play like that if she wants to give USC a chance. And then, you know, the role players are going to step up as well.
Which was exactly what I wanted to talk about from the Mystic side of this. Michael Vopel of ESPN put out his latest mock draft. And at one is Paige. She's going to Dallas for right now, although there's a lot of hubbub about whether she'll actually want to play for Dallas or will she pull basically an Eli Manning and be like, no. Then you have Olivia Miles, the guard out of Notre Dame, going two. And then the Mystics are up third, and there's been a lot of different players that have been mocked three throughout this process to Washington, and or actually to three in general. Four initially was Washington. They now have that third pick thanks to the trade with Chicago for Ariel Atkins. And they've got Kiki Iriafin going, who I think started the season kind of as the number two prospect behind Paige. They've got Kiki Iriafin, the name gets seemingly pronounced differently on every broadcast, so I apologize to Kiki. And if you're a Mystic, or if you're not, I should learn how to properly say your name. But she is now third. And last night in this game, 36 points, season high, And there was also just a, Michael writes about how she took control of the game. That when Juju goes down, imagine how frazzled you must be in that moment. Lindsey Gottlieb, the coach at Southern Cal, talked about how she was like upset and had to try to pull it together for her players in the huddle after seeing Juju go down, and she's in tears, like she's getting wheeled off or getting carried off and then ultimately wheeled in the back. Like it's a devastating thing to see happen to your best player, nevertheless, your friend, someone who you built your program around, if you're Gottlieb. And Irifin is able to not brush that off, but able to compartmentalize it, or to whatever extent she did, or use it as motivation, or just seize the opportunity, saying, all right, we need someone to step up and take over the way that Juju typically takes over. And she did it. And I think it's an interesting fit with the Mystics specifically because they've got Shakira, they've got Aaliyah. Like, how many bigs do you need? But also, if all three of them are super skilled and all can shoot from range, all can rebound, all can handle, they can do a little bit of everything, why not just take the best player available and figure it out? And of course, they could make another trade or something like that too. But very, very interesting idea to say, even though the two best youngest players remaining on the Mystics are bigs, shoot, if Irifin goes out and finishes this tournament strong, I mean, she's going to have a huge challenge if they win this next game. They face UConn and Sarah Strong, who's National Player of the Year, and 3 years from now, 4 years from now, will be the number one pick in the WNBA draft in 2029 or whatever the hell year that'll be. Like, if she goes out and dominates her and helps even push USC close to a Final Four, nevertheless, if she gets them there, I mean, then we're all of a sudden, I think, talking about her in the mix at two and not even getting to three.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting just because I feel as though Aaliyah Edwards and Kiki are sort of kind of the same player. Well, at least the Aaliyah Edwards we saw at Unrivaled anyway. We've never seen Aaliyah's bag unlocked, you know, until the one-on-one tournament, but we know that she has more in her bag. So I think it'll be interesting, but I think at the same token, like, you can never have like too many bigs, to be honest. Like, I don't think you can.
Yeah, too many tall, powerful, strong athletes that have multi-faceted skill sets.
Yeah,
you find a way to figure that out. That said, they obviously need some shooting too. One player who's not going to be available for the Mystics to select in the first round is the hometown kid. AZ Fudd is going back to Connecticut. Very interesting choice, and I think this is 1,000%. The NIL era coming to be, Anthony, because it used to be like, hey, you're a first round pick and you've got an injury history, go get your bag right now. And not that the WNBA, unfortunately, has enormous bags to offer that's about to double in size next year. And maybe that's something, too, that maybe they're not talking about is the rookie contracts in 2026 are going to look a little different than the rookie contracts in 2025. Because if you're unaware, the WNBA CBA is expiring after this season. And this is going to be the first one they've signed with the new TV money in. And they're going to get paid.
Yeah.
Like everyone's going to get paid double what they're getting right now, if not more, depending on the player and the situation. But they are, AZ Fudd, you know, is going to make probably a couple $1 million at UConn next year.
Yeah.
Stan? So what's the point of leaving? And she had a conversation with Gino Auriemma, and apparently Gino was like, look, I'll support you either way, but I think if you leave, you will eventually look back and be like, I didn't do everything I could do in a UConn uniform. That you didn't do everything you set out to do. And so even though she and Paige are very tight, and Beckers is very clear that she is leaving, even though she actually could go back for another, what feels like 17th year at UConn, AZ Fudd's going back. So there's one of the best shooters in the draft off the board, and someone that would have been a lot of fun to have in D.C. as she's from the area.
Yeah, I saw her put out on Instagram that she was coming back, and she also said like she wants to unlock something else in her game.
Yeah.
And I think slowly but surely as the season's gone on, as she's gotten healthier, she's been able to, you know, tap into some of that bag. Most of us know her as a shooter, but guess what? She's also a great defender.
Yep.
She can also get downhill, and she can also play make as she did last game. So I think that's more so like what she wants to do. And to be honest, I think she's probably going to want to go out there and get that National Player of the Year. Like,
she's going to challenge for it.
Because, she's a former, number one player in the women's game coming out of high school. So at the same token, I think she knows like who she is. I think she knows what she can be. and what her ceiling is. So, or I guess like pushing towards.
I think she wants to get back to like, I'm the best player in this class. Like, could she be the number one pick in next year's draft? Like, if she goes out and drops 20 a game, and UConn, you know, with her and Sarah Strong as a sophomore, and whoever else Geno has floating in and out of that program, could they go win a national title? Like, hell yeah. Or Final Four? Hell yeah. So I think that's definitely going to be interesting to watch. For whatever it's worth, real quick, especially since I'm going to say the Mystics three times in this, the current... or the full 12 pick mock draft from Vopal at ESPN. Beckers first, Miles second to Seattle, Iriafin third to Washington. Fourth is also Washington, Sonia Citrone, guard from Notre Dame. The Valkyries, the new team from Golden State, they get Dominique Malonga, who is a 6'6 center from France who has just crazy upside. Mm-hmm. Mystics third pick, Shea Terp. Cheyenne Sellers.
Ooh.
So 6'2 point guard.
Yeah.
Could you imagine 6'2 point guard? I guess Aaliyah is playing like the three. Iriafin's playing the four. Shakira's playing the five.
It's a big lineup right there.
Yeah.
Switching everything.
Yeah. Anissa Morrow, who I think is also a very interesting rebounding machine from LSU. She's going seven in Connecticut. Another foreign player, Asia Savica, Slovenian forward, goes to Connecticut at eight. Haley Van Lith, back as a first rounder after her resurgent year at TCU, goes nine to the Sparks. Georgia Amor, former Virginia Tech, current Kentucky point guard, 10 at Chicago. Sanaya Rivers, NC State. Her and Isaiah James are both borderline first round prospects. They've got Rivers going 11 to Minnesota, and then Sedona Price, Van Lith's running mate at TCU, the 6'7 center, goes 12th to the Dallas Wings. So
is Lauren Betts not coming out this year?
I feel like I just saw something on her.
I guess she's staying.
They are, as is Tania Latson, the guard from Florida State.
Gotcha.
So that's in here. Yeah. So Fudd, Betts, and Latson, top prospects for the 26th draft. Flaje Johnson is another one to watch.
Oh, for next year?
For this year. She's a true junior, so she could come out, and she does turn 22 this year.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. NCAA women / WNBA, three-year rule. It's like the NFL.
Yeah.
You have to be 3 years out of high school. So she could come out if she wants to go early, and she very well might, but she could easily go back for another year to LSU. All right. When we get back, Anthony, do we want to roll? We want to vibe check this? Here, I guess here's what we'll do. We got two options. If you want to call in, we're a month from the NFL draft. How you feeling about the Commanders' current status a month from the draft? 301-230-0980. But we are going to get back to the Terps, Lady Terps big win. So if we don't have any calls, Brenda Freeze was with Sheehan earlier. We'll play you a couple of cuts from that. And then Christy Winter-Scott's going to join us at 5 o'clock. Coming up in 10 minutes, Christy Winter-Scott, Maryland legend, talking about her alma mater's big win yesterday. Speaking of her alma mater, speaking of big wins, Kevin Willard was on with Sheehan earlier today and was unbelievable talking about the sequence that led to Derek Queen's game winner, as well as his own future with Maryland. Kevin pressed him, was like, are you staying? And he gave kind of an answer. And he's like, no. Are you staying? And so you got to hear that exchange coming up. Anthony, 6 o'clock hour? Are we getting that 5:30? When are we doing that?
6 o'clock hour. We're going to do Take a Man at 5:30.
Okay, so we get a little football in coming up at 5:30. But right now, before we... let's set the table for talking to Christy, because Kevin, Mr. Sheehan, was working turtle overtime today. He also had Brenda Freeze on to talk about the Lady Terps big win yesterday that we opened the show talking about today, and asked her about a couple of different things. First and foremost, what was she telling her team when the Terps were down 17 yesterday to Alabama?
You know, just encouragement, trying to, you know, give as much positivity, confidence that, you know, just we didn't have to do it all in one shot, and, you know, had to come down to getting a stop, then a score, and understanding just, you know, valuing the possessions. And, you know, credit to the resiliency of these kids. I mean, they fought, they battled, they believed, and, you know, just a huge turnaround in that game.
It was, and I think you could see that as well. Like, you could see, I don't want to say you could see the resilience, but you could see them not panicking. There was never a point where they were forcing things. Like there was a, and that's a fine line in sports, I think, Ant, is like, what's the difference between having a sense of urgency and panicking? Panicking is out of control. Panicking is we got to start chucking threes. Panicking is all of these things that don't lead to productive basketball. And Maryland never did that stuff. Like they were still, you know, getting into the paint, get one foot. The other thing I love about Maryland, like, all these kids think floaters are awesome now, especially in the men's game. It's an epidemic in the men's game.
Yeah.
But in the women's game too, like drive and it's the analytics driven threes or layups. And it's like, I got to get to the rim. Oh no, I'm too close. I can't get a layup. Floater. And Maryland has a bunch of guards that are willing to be like, if I get two steps inside the 3-point line and I'm wide open and in rhythm and there's a big that's floating around the rim, I'm just going to take the pull up. And so they started knocking down these mid-range shots and you know, they're good shots. They're in rhythm. They're shots they can clearly make because they did. And they hit a couple of those. Then, you know, they start to step out a little bit, extra help, bang, kick out threes. They start getting the ball moving a little bit more rotation. So they hit a bunch of shots of a bunch of different varieties. But I think the defining run or the defining characteristic in so many ways of that run that Maryland made was they got good shots. And so often when teams are down big, especially in a do or die situation, like it's not, they weren't down 17 in a regular season game. They're down 17 where if they don't come back, game's over or season's over.
Yeah, they have 13 minutes left in their season, man.
And they were able to put it together.
They were. And to be honest, I credit, you know, Brenda Freeze as well, because you just talk about panicking. She was very calm, you know, very encouraging, like, you know, clapping her teammates up like, all right, timeout. Let's figure things out. Let's calm down. We got, you know, 13 more minutes left in our season. Like, she was very positive as opposed to, you know, somebody else. Like, me, I'm not going to lie. If my team is down 17, Craig, I need to do something, say something that's going to ignite some fire.
Would you bring the clipboard?
No, I'm not breaking the clipboard.
You and Steve Curry?
No, I wouldn't. But I'm just saying, I would have did or said something that wasn't going to be, you know, calming and, you know, positive. And maybe that's why I'm not coaching, and she is. And she's been doing this for, you know, years and years. And she has over 800 wins, like, in her career. Shout out to her. But
I think Coach Freeze knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Facts. Anthony, still trying to figure it out. Coach Freeze got it under control. And she was calm when she needed to be, but she also, like, big defensive possessions. Like, she got the crowd fired up. You know, yep. It's great shots by ESPN and the camera work they were doing. And so ultimately, this incredible win gets him back to the Sweet 16. And Kevin asked Brenda Freeze where this win ranks for her in those 800 whatever that she's got.
Oh, well, first of all, I've got to say this weekend was Maryland madness at the highest level for both teams. And you are right. You know, you kind of forget about the body of work and that many games. And clearly, you know, I've been really fortunate to be a part of some special wins, that overtime win and the national championship game. And but this one, you know, ranks right up there. I mean, it had all the feels, the emotions, the highs, the lows, being down 17 to coming back and the double overtime. And just can't say enough about the resiliency of this group.
And that resiliency ultimately ended in a win that sends them to the Sweet 16. That game Friday, 5:00 against defending national champions South Carolina. Good luck. It is going to be tough. Should be a lot of fun. Great players on the floor all around. That game Friday, 5:00. I think it's an ESPN game. Might be ESPN2. Check your local listings for details. We're talking about it more, and we'll also continue to talk about the rest of the NCAA tournament with Christy Winter Scott, the Maryland basketball legend and NCAA women's hoops analyst, as well as, of course, Wizards analyst, joins us next here on the Hoffman Show.